Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And a positively minded life at this time, boy, talk about vital time for it to be positive. This is great. I mean, this is not great, but it's essential. I have with me today two of the most brilliant men I know who are in the field of psychology, Dr. Bernard Starr. Dr. Bernard Starr, who's been with me for the last few weeks, who's becoming a habit.
Hi, Bernie. Good habit.
A good habit. Because he and I love to talk and we love to share ideas. And with us today, this is a fabulous gift, Dr. Ronald Fievey, F-I-E-V-E, author of Bipolar 2, a new book. The press has kind of come after him. Dr. Ronald Fievey is a board-certified psychopharmacologist who trained in internal medicine, and his main specialty has been bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder, what does it mean? Well, we'll get to him and we'll talk about that, but the reason why I bring it to you is the following. I have a hypothesis, and I ask these two men who I respect to test out this hypothesis. The idea being that if the world has gotten itself in so much trouble based on some kind of over-everything that is very symptomatic of a manic world, overspending, over-exuberance, just a manic way of being, and if, through whatever reason, whether it be chemical swing or whether it be the end of a cycle, we have swung into a kind of a societal depression, as in a manic depression, if we understand that depression, maybe we can anticipate how best to deal with it and how best to recover from it. And so the idea here is that we have, that this, there's a persona that is represented by the general mood that's out there. And this persona is a persona of depression, but it is the kind of depression that is the opposite of the manic in the manic depressive syndrome. Kind of a beginning to you. It'll be a little complex, but when we get to it between Dr. Bernard Starr and Ronald Fievey, I think you're going to find some really, really fascinating stuff. Dr. Fievey, are you with us?
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to hear you. Good. As loud as you can when you speak up, because we have this on phone. Good. So, Ronald, meet Bernie Starr. Bernie Starr, say hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Bernie. Nice.
Great to meet you.
Yeah, the three of us have got to get together. It's be a good meeting. What do you think, Ronald, from what I've said?
I would say this, that having spent my own life studying manic depression, the highs and lows of people who have this genetic disorder, and now seeing the end of the manic phase on Wall Street and the beginning depression, that it's like the genetic thing that we deal with in psychiatry. You have to pay the piper. Once you have this excess spending, this volatility, this euphoria, this crazy recklessness, which is characteristic of the manic phase of bipolar manic depression, you then have to pay the piper and you go into a depression, and that depression may last 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, but I think if you take the parallel with the illness, manic depression, it's usually worse in the fall. It continues, if not treated, into January, February, March. In the manic depressed phase, you might get the highest suicidal rate in March, and then in April and May, it starts getting better and gets alleviated as the summer comes. And maybe that is going to be the history of what's happening to our own stock market, which is at a low now. I don't think it's going to change till well into the winter time, but I think there is a light on the horizon, and it will get better, like the stock market of the 1930s got better. We got over that. We got over the depression of the 1973s, the depression of the 1987, and this national depression will get better. That's
now, I know, Dr. Fievey, that you've been sought out by a lot of the news media, but you know, our media, WBAI, is less interested in the stock market per se, because most of our people don't have a pot. You know what I mean? I mean, there's not their investments they worry about, but they do worry about.
They worry about their homes.
They worry about their homes if they have homes. They worry about the mood that they're in. They're worried about the powerlessness that they feel, the helplessness. They feel self-critical. They feel like they've done things wrong. Now, that is classic to me of depression when I see that. And that one of the things that I see when I look at somebody who's in this kind of depressive phase is I know in my mind, you're in a mood. This is a mood. And if you think about our society, it is a mood. If you think about the depression that's out there, it is a general mood. The October sales of retail sales, the indication of that, how everything just stopped. It was like somebody slapped the kids with their hands in the cookie jar. They suddenly said, oh, I'm not going to buy anything. And suddenly people automatically stopped buying. So what we have is a kind of a depression mood that is there. Now, when you're in the middle of this mood, you can't think that it's just a mood. You think all the thoughts that run through your mind. Why do people think such, try to attribute to the cause of the mood? You know, like it's my fault, I have no power, I should be better. Why does the mind take you to that place as opposed to just saying to yourself, this is the mood, I'm in this mood, this is the other end of my cycle. Like if you're a manic depressive, oh, I'm just depressed because I'm a manic depressive. No, that when they're depressed, they feel like they're depressed because life is a horrible thing. What would you say to that, Ronald?
Bernie would have a different explanation than mine, but mine would get to the chemical changes. That
all right, let's go there.
Yes. Well, during the depressed phase, over the years that we've studied this, both at the National Institute of Mental Health and Columbia University, where I work, we find that in the depressed phase, severe depressed phase of bipolar disorder, there is a decrease in hormones, neurotransmitter hormones like norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine, you've heard of those. And now certain studies that have been done on Wall Street entrepreneurs have shown that during the depressed phase of a market, these people may have low cortisol levels as well. So all of these hormones and neurotransmitter chemicals may be depressed. And without the Wall Street debacle, just plain old bipolar depression shows that these chemical hormones are genetically down during the depression.
Well, let me ask you something. Cortisol, I don't see how somebody who's a trader or a shopper or somebody who's running on a high cortisol level suddenly gets to an absence of cortisol. How does that happen?
Well, what usually happens with the trader is that if he starts failing and we go into a general bear market, the studies by Dr. Coates and his colleagues have shown that the cortisol level increases and that it increases as well during depression. We know that during bipolar depression you have an increased cortisol level. And we now also see in the study on Wall Street traders that during their periods of uncertainty and loss, their cortisol levels went up, whereas during their exuberant periods of profitability, their testosterone levels went up.
Oh, wait a minute now. Then I'm mistaken here, because I thought cortisol was a stress hormone that would be more like mimicking a steroid, that high cortisol levels would lead to high energy.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Oh, it doesn't.
Cortisol is produced by the testes and by the adrenal gland. And it goes up the minute you have a major psychological or physical stress. If you get into a car accident and are lying on the road, they do a cortisol level, you know, it's way up there. If you have a big psychological stress on your life, your cortisol level goes up. But in depression, for years we've measured the cortisol level, and it's way up. Depressed person is tense, can't function, can't do anything. The cortisol level's way up.
Okay.
And these stock traders that went into a period of uncertainty and the market went down and they have had a fear of losing, their cortisol levels went up, whereas when they were making money and profiting, their testosterone levels went up. This is the study that was recently published at the University of Cambridge by Dr. Coates.
Is that the one that was in the New York Times saying
yes, it was.
It's a guy thing?
Yeah, it was in the New York Times last week.
Fascinating article. Fascinating article. Talked about how the entire economy, both the upside and the downside, is run by male hormones.
Yep, by hormones, absolutely.
And by male hormones.
I would add, not just by these two male hormones, but also by the three mood hormones, serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine, and they are located right next to the testosterone hormones, and they're in the brain in the amygdala, and all of these hormones are invoked in some of these major crises or in manic depression.
Do you believe, and this is going to be just a short, we're going to get right to Bernie Starr, do you believe if women were running this economy, it would have never happened?
If you're going to believe the study of from Cambridge University, that certainly suggests this.
Yeah, I certainly suggest
women
that.
Women have only 10% of the body testosterone, male hormone, that men have. So they would not be subject to such fluctuations of a high market or a low market. And in the high market, if you keep betting and betting, your testosterone level goes up, it could go up to a point where you start betting irrationally. And women having less of a small amount of testosterone and their cortisol level also is not as reactive might on that one hypothesis be considered to be more eligible to take on tasks of major responsibility and risk-taking.
Well, what's part of what I consider beautiful in the new administration is that so many women are being introduced into the new administration, and clearly even the president has got enough of both sides of his personality, the male and the female side, to have that balance present. So, but that, of course, solution is for a problem that was created a long time ago, whether that ever gets a chance to manifest. Let me go to Dr. Bernard Starr for a minute.
Don't forget Cleopatra and some of the old ones that did pretty well when they managed the overall kingdom.
Yep.
Well, just a comment about that. I thought I just read, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that bipolar disorder is more common in women than men. Would that mean, if that's the case, would that mean that women are more on the depressive side, that they don't have the mania as much?
Bernie, we're not absolutely sure of that figure. The old figures used to show that women had depression twice as much as men and that bipolar illness was also more frequent. But the problem was the epidemiological methods they used to determine these statistics. And the fact is that women go to a clinic when they're depressed much more frequently than men do. Men stay home and sweat it out. So we're really not sure that that's the case. And it's beginning to look more and more with recent statistics, epidemiological studies, that maybe the two sexes have about the same amount of bipolar disorder. But it's not a firm figure yet. There's still a question about it.
Okay, but let me just recalibrate this discussion. Right now we're talking about one extreme, bipolar. You know, that's one end.
Absolutely.
And like everything else, both depression and mania have a range from a low level to a high level. And another thing, I think your comment, Armand, when you said, you know, these most of your listeners don't have a pot. And what that it brings to mind is that many of the people who are depressed now about the economy, about the state of the world, et cetera, were not part of the mania. I mean, they were not the traders on Wall Street. So in a sense, many of the people who are depressed right now and down are really victims of other people's disorders and mania.
So just like you're saying, you know, there's a spillover depression. You know, there's a depression that comes with the economy and with people losing jobs, and of course everybody's being touched. But the mood gets so dark. And now I think Dr. Phoebe said something interesting. You know, not only does the mood get dark, but notice this happened after the summer. And notice now if you're going to be on a downhill slide, you have the shortness in the light cycle adding to the depression that happens. Plus the powerlessness of news after news of doing nothing but spilling out the negative because that's what they want to do, with a new theory among the Republicans, which is they call now Darwinian markets, means that we hope everybody kind of gets reduced to the rubble. so that it could start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like people are just sitting there in fear. Now, some people have a good attitude. Good attitude meaning that they look at it and they say, oh, my God, it's horrible, but it's not getting me. I got my family. I got my love. I got my feet to keep me warm. Right? And then there are other people who take it so deeply. What kind of depression is it that hits on top of a depression that kind of unmasks maybe that it's something more serious within? How does an individual know when it's just them, the societal mood, or whether they're in trouble?
Well, Armin, I think it's important to point out that the kind of depression we're talking about people in this country is mostly a reactive depression. That is different from bipolar depression or major depression disorder, which is a chemical depression. Now, when the people react and they didn't have mania or weren't thrilled and had that kind of a high life, just were absolutely normal people that are now down and feeling the pressure and the deprivation that is going on through the society, this is called a reactive depression. It's the type of depression you get when a loved one dies, when you have a major financial loss, when you lose your home, and that is not a chemical depression. But if you
doesn't it become a chemical depression?
Well, if 4% of the population is bipolar and up to 10% of the population have some form of chemical depression. So if you have this reactive depression that also falls on those people, they have a more serious so-called double depression, and that doesn't go away. That stays on.
Well, what's a double depression? That's a very important concept.
The double depression is a reaction to loss, either a loved one, a financial loss, loss of a home, loss of a lot of money, on top of being depressed or clinical depressed or having manic depression, which is a chemical depression. So if you got both together, the depression doesn't go away in a month or so like a normal bereavement does, or when the markets get better, the depression goes away. The depression stays, and in addition, oftentimes benefits from an antidepressant drug or lithium.
So there's a reason that you would say, if you're having an overreaction, see, now, Bernie, I know that you and I would look at it and say, if you're having an overreaction meaning that you are powerless, helpless, unable to function in your work, unable to function in your home, changing food habits, changing sleep habits, showing signs of serious depression over what's happening, which is serious, but it is not necessarily that serious that you
Precisely.
Should be feeling
yes.
that way.
And sometimes, by the way, that could turn around on a dime, which, again, emphasizes different strategies for dealing with the extreme form or the bipolar form, and people who are reactive, or another term in this case would be victims of other people's exuberance or bipolar disorders. And, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that that could turn around. I mean, for example, the person whose home is in jeopardy or whose job is in jeopardy or somebody who lost his job, sometimes just getting a new job or finding that, hey, I really am not going to lose my job. Or somebody comes along and helps you out with the mortgage. And, that could be the occasion for breaking out the champagne the next day.
Well,
now,
that's the proof.
That would be proof that it's purely a reactive depression. But if the guy gets the new job and he still can't get out of the house, still is losing weight, thinking hopeless, helpless, worthless, that means that the reactive part of the depression was only a portion and the chemical part still is there, and that needs to be...
correct. So then we need a diagnosis in that case. We
need
to be careful.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have to make differentiations. We're not talking about some kind of monolithic giant here.
Well, okay, so here we are, three professionals who do this diagnosis for a living. However, if you're sitting at home with your boyfriend or your husband and you're looking at him and he's depressed sitting on the couch, what are you looking for? You're looking for, is he anhedonic? There's a good word for you. Anhedonic is a lady who lives around the corner. No, anhedonic is... when you're not able to experience pleasure, no matter what the situation, that's a serious sign of depression. Is he self-critical? Is he blaming himself? Is he saying, I did wrong, I'm batting himself over the head? Is he not taking care of himself physically? Has he gotten to the point where he doesn't even bathe? If you begin seeing these signs, you're beginning to see stuff that doesn't yield to situational shifts, and then you're seeing something serious. What our professionals are saying, at that level, you've got two things that you have to do. If you can't evaluate, you know, is this, like, let's say you get a cold, and then you get a cold and it doesn't go away, and then you start coughing, and now your coughing generates some kind of colored phlegm. At what point do you go to the doctor? Well, at what point do the person, do you, looking at your mate, who is sinking into this powerlessness and helplessness and saying, oh, the sky is falling, and I can't stand it, and I'm even thinking about ending my life, which many people do at this time. At what point do you say to your mate, come on, honey, get up, we're going to the doctor? And that's the thing that I think is kind of essential. There's a point at which, when you look at depressions, you can't distinguish if it's a situational reactive depression or something that's triggered what we are calling the double depression, which is a very serious condition. Why is it so serious?
Well, when it cripples somebody to the extent that you're describing, I think you gave the answer. And it's good to have somebody who's an observer of that, because often when you're in the throes of that kind of depression, you're not capable of making the decision of, I need help. But I would say in cases of all of the above that you outlined, Armand, you should get a consultation on that and get help as soon as possible, because things can escalate, and then you can trigger some of the chemical reactions that were described.
Well, Bernie, knowing you as being somebody who's a fairly holistic practitioner, but when you would see people, you would want to distinguish between, if you saw manic depression and you saw that there might be a medication respondent person, right, or a talk respondent person, or they need both, what would make you evaluate those two? At what point would you say this is a medication problem?
Well, you know, sometimes that's not an easy diagnosis to make. So you want to get a detailed history, and you want to see to what extent really the person has shifted from, let's say, if the person was a very positive or a well-functioning person and suddenly is showing all of these signs of depression, of withdrawal, sadness, obsessional thoughts, totally negative, apathy, low energy level, etc., or teary. We've seen all of crying constantly, which may be untypical for the person. Well, you know, all of those are red flags.
Wait. Let's go over those again. That was a fast list.
Yes, okay.
Things that you would see.
Well, we mentioned withdrawal. The person takes to bed, for example, when the person previously was fairly outgoing and social. The person who was formerly upbeat and now is sad all the time and prefers
being
alone.
So sadness and moodiness is an indication. That's pretty easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
Withdrawal,
yeah, many of these,
even from friends, you know.
Yeah,
I don't want to.
I add a couple of symptoms here. The serious depression, which I see a lot of, has hopelessness, helplessness, worthlessness. There's a 10-pound weight gain, 10 to 20-pound weight gain in 2 or 3 months, or a 10 to 20-pound weight loss in the last 2 or 3 months. There's no energy. They can't function.
Well, before you just jump over those, helplessness, powerlessness, could you spend a minute with each one?
Yeah.
Helplessness. What kind of helplessness? I can't get out of my chair?
I asked the depressed person, do you feel helpless at this point in your life with this state of mood that you're in? And a depressed person will clearly say yes.
What does helpless mean?
Well, it means that they can't function. They need the wife to do simple little tasks for them, where before they were normally functioning people that could go to work and or go to school, and they can't function in a normal way. They're slowed
down. So helplessness is not powerlessness.
No, it's... it's feeling that they need someone else to do the simple chores that they were able to do
you
before.
Feel like a baby. You feel
hopelessness is clear, that they just don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. And worthlessness, you pointed out before, they're critical of themselves. they're no good. It may get down to feeling that they're despicable or totally unrelated, self-worthy feelings, worthlessness feelings that the people around them would not be able to corroborate.
So if we were to look, Dr. Fevey, Ronald, if we were to look at people, and we see people who have these kind of feelings frequently, but they talk themselves out of it, and then we look at a society that kind of crashes to a halt and brings with it a mood, a kind of a shroud that encourages this to unmask in people, this is where the double depression comes in.
Absolutely. Let me point out two critical things that you haven't mentioned yet. In the depression, that is the chemical, the bipolar depression, the clinical depression, 4% of the population or more, there is almost always a history of having the depression before or having highs and lows before, and there is almost always a family history. And this is where you really have to look into the family history, because these types of depressions and bipolar conditions have a history of gambling, suicide, alcoholism. We haven't talked about alcohol and drug addiction. These are critically linked up. They're called comorbid illnesses with the chemical depression. And you don't see that as much in the normal population, even though it's there.
But you say comorbid, meaning that the person will do is you'll see an increase in drinking.
You'll see an increase in drinking in the bipolar patient always. The percentage is always much higher. There's something like a 60% incidence of drug addiction in bipolar patients. You know, along the way, it's either cocaine or pot or amphetamines or something. 60% is now the latest figure in people who have bipolar conditions in this society.
How do those chemicals affect the mood itself? Does it keep it around, or does it help get rid of it?
It gives a temporary high, or it gives a temporary softening. For instance, if the manic patient is wild and into a frenzied, irritable state, and he starts drinking, this is like self-medication. They will feel more mellow that way. Or if the depressed patient takes cocaine, they may feel an up period, or as they would with an amphetamine. So they treat themselves instead of going to the psychiatrist or psychologist, and they get into this because it's an addictive dependency, and then they keep getting worse and worse and worse, and you have a second illness called comorbid on top of the original bipolar illness.
And that's really tough. And, you know, here people are just trying to get by and do the best they can with their managed health care being so limited. They can't afford to get to the doctors. They can't afford to get to see it. You go to an emergency room, psychiatrist isn't going to see it or work with it at all, even if you do a temporary visit. So people are going to have to educate themselves and, when possible, reach out for help. And between you and your agency and my agency, we've been able to direct people to where they can get some help, even if it's stuff that, you know, they don't have the resources available. You know, the name of the place that you run, Dr. Fevey, what's the name of it?
Well, what we run is, it's my own practice, Ronald R. Fevey on 5th Avenue in 76, and we have Fevey Clinical Services there, which is a research group that will take patients free that have depression or anxiety disorders, and if they qualify, they can go into a study of one of the new medications that we're testing to see if the medication is successful for depression, bipolar, or general anxiety disorder. And these treatments are done by board-certified psychiatrists and psychologists, and they are sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry, and they are no cost, and afterwards the patient is brought into a low-cost clinic after the study's done.
Yeah, and no guarantee.
There's no guarantee. But it's
no guarantees on this one, because you're getting
called,
it for free because you're
clinical services.
You're a guinea pig.
A lot of work with patients that have no funds whatsoever.
Stick with me, Dr. Ronald Fevey. If you don't mind, we're going to have to take a short break. When we get back from our break, we're going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll continue in our discussion about this kind of double depression and the societal depression. Thank you very much for being here. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be right back.
Oh, by this name, I speak this language. It's not quite the same. For no other reason than this, it's my home. I'm and the places I used to be, far from all God. You've traveled this long, you just have to go on. Don't even look back to see how far you've come. Though your body is bending under the load, there is nowhere to stop anywhere on this road.
Lhasa, anywhere I go. It's kind of the feeling of it, you know, anywhere I go, it comes with me. It's the thing about this kind of mood depression thing that's happening over our society. It's going to be a fascinating holiday season. Because this holiday season's not going to have as many bells and whistles as it's had in the past. People will certainly be lighting fewer bulbs and putting up fewer Christmas trees and saving the economy somewhat, and consciousness. There's a whole bunch going to be happening. My guests with me today are Dr. Ronald Fevey, specialist in bipolar disorder and understanding depression, wrote a recent book called Bipolar 2, which I highly recommend. I loved it. Dr. Bernard Starr, who is the head of the religionandspirituality.com organization that does integrate psychology and spirituality, but Bernard has been a psychotherapist for a long period of time. We're kind of talking about looking at what's happening in the world and what you could see and how you could sort the wheat from the chaff. Now, let me tell a story. I had a dream. And in this dream, I remember it was a dream about I was in a tornado. And I'm in the tornado, and I realize I'm in the center of a tornado. And I know that the tornado any minute now is going to scoop me up and take me out. So I think to myself, well, what'll I do? Maybe I'll go underground. I'll dig a hole and I'll bury myself. And so when the tornado passes over me, it won't suck me up. But I know that's not going to work because I can't dig that fast. So then I think I'll jump through the tornado. I'll jump through to the other side And this way I'll come out of the tornado, but I know better than that. That tornado is so strong that it's going to whisk me with it. But here I am in the eye of the tornado. For the moment, I'm okay. But I know any minute now it's going to pass over me. And in my dream, I figured it out. You move with the tornado. You move with it. Wherever it moves, you stay in the eye of it. And if you could keep moving with wherever the tornado is, it doesn't suck you up, as long as you could dance, as long as you could move, as long as you could still be in motion with the tornado. Now that, I think, is a beautiful metaphor for what I expect of people. There is a tornado all around you. You can try to jump through it. You could try to bury underneath it. You could try to deny its existence and bury your head. Not going to save you much. But you can also move with it and not by it, not be in it, not believe that this is all real. Of course, the eye is always there. There's always a calm place in the middle.
Well, that's a beautiful metaphor, Armand. But I would add to that, that's Armand. Okay? And what that brings to mind is that that's a terrific solution for you, and it may work for other people. But also what we find is that there's different strokes for different folks. And at times we thought that there's just one approach to healing, have people spill out their guts, catharsis. Let's rush in teams to work with them. But what we're finding more and more is that that sometimes things like repression work for some people. For some people, withdrawing for a period of time works. Now, here we're not talking about that extreme withdrawal. And Ronald, by the way, I think that you were talking about, you used the statistic 4%, that 4% possibly have this extreme bipolar disorder. But that still leaves 96% of the population, and that's the population you were talking about, Armand, that are suffering from malaise right now and wondering about the future. And now we're heading to the holiday season, and the holiday season itself is known to bring on depression. So that may be even a third layer, a triple a type of depression. But what comes to mind also is something I heard just the other day, and you'll love this, Armand. A crisis is a terrible thing to lose. Okay. You know, clearly meaning that that often out of crisis there's something to learn, and it's an opportunity to, you know, take another look at our lives and maybe find a new track to take. And particularly when the crisis was not necessarily your fault. You know,
now that's fascinating. Ronald, let's go back to this for a minute. You're still with us?
Oh, yes, I'm with you.
Cortisol. We're going to talk about cortisol. Bernie says a crisis is a terrible thing to lose. One of the things we think about in the uphill spiral of the manic kind of society, and I think it's not 4% of our society. I think it's what the society is. But the 4%, the upward spiral is a kind of a crisis. I got to beat everybody out. I got to get the car. I got to get enough gas. I got to. And then the downward spiral is another crisis. So we're not in the kind of a depression that's not filled with crisis. Crisis is the issue itself. Is it that we need a new crisis to bring us on a new direction? Not that we're going to fix depression, but we're just going to be crisis-oriented. Do we need a war? What do we need? So
well,
what do you think, Ronald?
Yeah, I first of all want to tell you that I am very pleased to be a contributor here on a program where we have, first of all, Bernie, who is giving us a perspective from the religious psychological point of view. You, with your years of experience as a commentator, psychologist, a counselor, and myself now with the biochemical or the medical aspects of what we're talking about, depression and mood swings, and now moving that into the whole society and what we're going through. I think this is a very excellent
it's a beautiful
topic
thing.
You put your finger on, and I want to comment you for that, doing that and having such insight to bring this to the public's awareness. The need for a new crisis is an old psychological concept that some people live their lives crisis after crisis after crisis. You take it away from them, they don't do well. They have to function in a crisis. Now, that's not exactly what you were talking about, but I guess if you go back to President Teddy Roosevelt, he was a manic depressive, well known in all the historical studies. And after he would have dinner at the White House, he'd invite boxers in to prize fight, like manics, with this unsurmountable energy. But what he always says, where is there a war? Is there a new one coming up? If there is, I'm for it. So he wanted a crisis. And manic people and people that are, you know, highly driven, highly energetic, they thrive on crises. And as I read in the Wall Street Journal about 3 years ago, there was an interview of all the major CEOs of the leading Wall Street money-making firms. And the interview was, how do you feel about a crisis and stress in your lives? And they said, stress, a crisis, give me more of it. I need it. I can't function without it. So high-powered, manic-type people love crises. Now, whether the country needs a new crisis, like Teddy Roosevelt said they did, we needed a new war. Well, there we went into Cuba for the Spanish War. He needed a crisis, and he found it, and he acted on it. Well, we have a new presidency here now. I think that Obama is going to look at things from a totally different perspective. I don't think he's going to rush into anything. I don't think he needs a crisis. The old saying was that the economy does better if there's a war. I don't think that's going to happen again with this new administration. I hope not.
Well, you think that there is a kind of a mentality that's existing. Since we see that we've moved from crisis to crisis, maybe it's time to live a different way. But, you know, I could think of people laying at home right now that are laying around and they're kind of drunk and they're depressed and they don't have a job and they're listening to the radio. And then if suddenly they heard a noise outside, they would jump and run outside because they're welcoming.
Absolutely.
So I think you two guys are pointing to something very interesting. We have a society that is not only depressed and has the potential of a growing depression because of the oncoming shortness of the days, chemical changes that take place, situational disturbances and mood disorders, but we also have a crisis-responsive, hungry culture that is almost ready to jump at something. And we have to be careful with that.
Yes.
You know, this is one of the things where you could suddenly wind up with guns on the bell towers.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Well, the need for excitement is what you're talking about. And as a matter of fact, I had a friend who used to, who worked out in Hollywood, therapist, and he treated some, you know, leading people in the entertainment industry. And he said that it was very frequent for him that people would come to him, not when they hit the bottom, but when they hit the top. That was the crisis. And there's some very famous cases of that. I think like Richard Pryor, he talked about it, that his crisis came when he became successful. He said, look, he says, I was a street kid. You know, I'm used to fighting my way to success. And suddenly they're coming to me and they want me to do a movie. And they say, what do you want? You want a Rolls Royce? You want a house? You want this? You want that? And he had a lot of trouble dealing with that. So there is a need, and maybe it's built into us, to most people, a need for stimulation and excitement. Also, you mentioned Teddy Roosevelt. And it's interesting, and that brings up a whole other subject. You might want to go with this, Armand. I'm sure you'll have some ideas about it. But there's a whole list of very famous people who are believed to have suffered from bipolar disorders, or at least extreme forms of either mania or depression. Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Goethe, Balzac, Hansel, Schumann, Tolstoy, Virginia Woolf, Hemingway, and the list goes on and on. And I find something intriguing about that. I don't know exactly where that goes.
Some of our great, well, I think this is what Ronald's book is
about.
Well,
I think if you read my first book,
I was going to say that, both your first and the second book.
I have a whole chapter on politicians and bipolar disorder in the first book, Mood Swing, and this has been researched now extensively. All of these great leaders had a what we would define today in the consulting office as a form of bipolar disorder, oftentimes bipolar II, because they didn't go psychotic in the manic phase, except perhaps Hitler did. But the other manics were people like Churchill, and they won the war. They sat around the high-level office at midnight with all the generals flaking out and slumping over, while Churchill was wide awake and went down in time. So his manic energy is well known, and as well known as Ted Turner, who...
By the way, Ted Turner, who is an old associate of mine, somebody who I knew personally, has his recent book, and he's talking about... He has such a beautiful insight into his own bipolarity that I'm looking forward to his to the way he presents himself.
Yeah, but every time he stopped his lithium, he wound up in the Wall Street Journal fighting and attacking
Absolutely.
Our great leaders. And then when you go back on lithium, he'd start getting calm again.
I was actually with him while he was taking over CBS. And it was one of those critical times. Let me bring this back to what you're saying, and I think you're bringing us to another point. We have a society that has a tendency to slide into either a mood disorder of over-exuberance or a mood disorder, as we could see, of a kind of a depression. We're in a depressive slide right now, and the depressive slide, we can talk about a persona, a general mood. This general mood, as we slide into it and we watch the people around us, some people are going to be touched by this mood, and it's going to trigger a double depression. Double depression meaning that they are sliding off this high of theirs, and they are touching off some other disturbance that was there. In those cases, you're going to see serious symptoms of depression, at which case we are asking you to get that person some professional help. We're also saying that there is a tendency on the part of our society to look for, as part of this way of being that we are, how these dinosaurs called humans stayed on this earth, is to go from crisis to crisis. So here we are, Jesus crisis. We're at another crisis. We're going to be another group of people who are going to be sliding along the bottom and sliding along the bottom, and we're going to be getting lethargic, and we're going to be sliding. Now, here's a question about depression. Isn't it true in the bipolarity, which I know is only 4%, but in bipolarity, isn't there a time in depression when a person has a tendency to repop out of the depression back into mania without medication? Because there has to be, otherwise it wouldn't be called a mood disorder.
Absolutely. It's
what
called,
is it at the bottom that happens?
Well, it's called a switch process.
And what happens? What is it? What are the symptoms of that?
We see that in a bipolar depression, a person who may be almost to his bed for 3 months, totally, totally depressed, and one morning he will wake up and say, God, it's all changed. It changed overnight. It's a switch process that occurs almost as quickly and as volatile as the stock market has been going
down. Do we have any predictors of that kind of depression in people? Now
the only thing we know that can cause it is giving an antidepressant to a bipolar patient when there's no protection of bipolar medication. That can trigger this switch process.
Okay, but there are many, many bipolar people who are manic depressives, who did not have medication and still have that
yes,
switch.
Yes, and one of the other triggers we know about is change in time zone, jet set. But the rest of the triggers we just don't know. We don't know why it happens.
But there could be a sudden awakening.
Yes, indeed.
A sudden alertness that people feel, and they feel like, that's enough of that. And that could happen with or without. You're saying with the serious cases, let's do it with. Let's get them some help.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing that we have to understand as professionals is we are looking at a mood. We are looking at a persona. We're not looking at reality. We're looking at a kind of reality-based persona of depression. and that we, as we watch it, we cannot do things like what everybody thinks. Let's accentuate the positive. Let's tell people, well, you know, just remember, people in China are starving. It doesn't work. You can't tell people to remember the good things. It doesn't work.
The depressed millionaire may feel he has to save string. He is so impoverished and at the bottom of his last sou.
And you know what you may be doing that may help him? Bringing him another string that he has to save. That may say, I'm with you.
Yep, exactly.
I think the thing that we need to do when we see people is not to try to rationalize them out of their irrational position of depression.
It doesn't help to say buck up or cheer up. That doesn't really help them.
So
I'm talking about the
that's right.
chemical depression, as Josh Logan used to say on his interviews, telling me to buck up never helped my manic depression.
That's right. So the only thing that could help is one of two things. Either knowing that there are people there who are leaning on your side, waiting with you and okay with you, that may help, or create a new crisis. And I very often have seen mates who get sick of their husbands being depressed create a crisis. They say, I'm going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that crisis turns the person around.
Yep.
They wake up and say, oh, well, what was I doing, sleeping?
Well, sometimes, though, when the person is in the manic phase, and I'm talking from personal experience with a relative of mine, my brother-in-law, you know, in one of these sad cases of somebody, a brilliant guy, but he would increasingly go off the deep end. He was primarily, though, manic. Few people ever saw him in a real...
alcoholic, too?
Depressed. Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. He wasn't depressed. But people found him funny often and didn't really notice the manic part of it until it went over the top, because these people are often, they're very entertaining, they're very brilliant, they think fast, et cetera, et cetera.
To manage a late-night talk show, you have to be a little hypomanic. You have to have that quality, otherwise you can't do that job that well. So the hypomania is oftentimes a advantage in the society, and many of our top leaders in all walks of life have hypomanic personalities, at least a form of the bipolar too, if they're not manic depressive.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Dr. Ronald Fevey, whose new book, is the book out?
Yeah, the book's out. It's
Bipolar 2. Go read about it, my friends, especially you people who have energetic boyfriends and girlfriends who seem to be very high energy. Bipolar 2 doesn't necessarily mean a condemnation, doesn't mean that there's something wrong. It could be just a personality type. I like it very much. We'll be again with Dr. Ronald Fevey. I want to thank you, Dr. Bernard Starr, for being with us. You know, you're absolutely right, Ronald. The high-level kind of professional discussion that could go on through the vehicle, this access of WBAI is just a beautiful thing. We'll continue to do this work. It's wonderful to be with both of you. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you,
Armand.
Sure. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Wonderful to be here with these people. I could sit here and talk all day. But anyway, I'll be back with you soon at 1 p.m., my friends. And we will bring you more interesting, fabulous stuff. Thanks so much for being with us. If you want a copy of today's program, you can go to thepositivemind.com or you could go to WBAI.org. I'll be back with you.
Stormy weather, frosty cloud. What a pair. And you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. Good afternoon. My name is Michael G. Haskins. Are you getting ready to go to lunch? Are you having lunch right now? Great. Stick around. I'm coming up next at 2 p.m. with a light show, and I'd love to have you stay right where you are. A couple of announcements, and then we'll move on to a light show.